we need to think more about how we're observing children, how we're reflecting on what they're learning, how we're documenting what we're learning, and how we're supporting their learning in the what should be always fluid environment of their classrooms.
Aloha, and welcome to Emua Literacy, a podcast dedicated to moving Hawaii forward with local literacy solutions. I'm Erin D'Amelio.
And I'm Dr. Esmeralda Carini. And in each episode, we will be addressing perceived obstacles in literacy by thinking through solutions together with our colleagues and friends from all walks of literacy life that are based right here in Hawaii.
Today, we're chatting with Dr. Kathleen O'Dell, formerly the academic officer for the Kailua-Kalaeo Complex area, and soon to be an instructor for the Human Development and Family Studies program at Windward Community College. Dr. O'Dell brings a wealth of experience. She holds a master's in early childhood education and a PhD in multicultural and international early childhood education from Kent State University. She was with the Hawaii Department of Education for 5 years and is passionate about her work in promoting equity, diversity, and inclusion in schools, as well as quality early childhood education and family engagement. Kat, Ez, and I cover a lot of material in this episode about what a quality preschool experience looks like. Kat does a great job of bringing in the research to this conversation, so I won't do that here. Instead, let's listen in and find out for ourselves.
Today, we're really excited because we get to chat with a colleague and good dear friend of mine, Dr. Kathleen O'Dell. Welcome, Kathleen.
Thanks for having me.
You really light up, Kat, whenever we talk about the Kinder music and, you know, ways that you would design preschool or early childhood learning opportunities. And it really resonates with my beliefs around that because, for example, I always try to encourage singing and song, because it's a wonderful way to build that oral language development. Can you tell us a little bit about your experiences with Kinder music or just sort of your thoughts on that sort of approach to learning in early childhood?
Rhyming, music, and movement are all parts of pre-literacy for children. And I could go on and on about the studies that show what that does to the brain and the neurons and the connections it makes.
Go ahead. Tell us.
We love it.
Children who gain steady beat early on are actually earlier readers.
I didn't know that.
Yes, they are. But things like Kinder music and programs like that, that's something that can be incorporated into classroom teaching as well, because it's not just about the singing portion of it or being able to use instruments. It's also about taking turns. It's about the songs that you go like stop and go, freeze. Those things teach self-regulation, turn-taking, and social skill building. It's all of those things. It's about listening to the quiet music and talking about how that makes you feel and getting in touch with our feelings, being able to label feelings with language, that if you give teachers the opportunity to learn how to teach through music and movement, then that's something that can be incorporated into their classrooms. And for some teachers, it comes naturally. And for other teachers, it is something they have to work on. But again, that's part of a quality program. So when you look at, you know, your circle time, for example, so much can be accomplished in your circle time or your meeting time. It should not be about the calendar and the days of the week. That's pretty much irrelevant to your preschool child, actually. So that time can be spent with music and movement, with guided and shared reading opportunities, with time for collaboration and really talking through problems that children have seen and solutions they might have, interests they might have about something they'd like to study and research.
Yeah, you're a big fan of that sort of, not project-based learning, but really taking the students or the children's interests and creating sort of a unit of study around that. Is that right, Kat?
I would even like stray away from saying unit of study, but when you're in preschool and kindergarten, we call it the project approach, and that comes out of the Reggio Emilia.
Yes, the Montessori.
No, that's different. That's another one that's also from Italy, actually.
The Italians, they know how to do it.
Exactly. Where Montessori is very focused on allowing children to work independently, and it goes from concrete materials to abstract thinking. Reggio Emilia is very much an environmental-based, community-based way of thinking. So for example, in a Reggio Emilia classroom and in the project approach, you observe the children and you see what they're interested in, and then you design the environment to support that learning. So they believe that the environment is a third teacher. So the family is first, the teacher is second, and the environment is third. So if you have children who are constantly watching the ants outside and looking at what the ants are doing and talking about how the ants move and how they deliver food and where they live, and then you start to design everything in the classroom around ants. Then you have books that are about ants. You're singing songs that are about ants. You might have an ant farm inside. You're doing art related to ants. You design the environment around their interest, and you ask those provoking questions to really scaffold on what they know already and encourage them to learn more.
I mean, there's different types of preschools, right? What would make a quality early childhood experience to give that foundation for literacy later on, literacy development?
We could spend a couple days talking about what would make a quality preschool program, but ideally we would be serving both 3 and 4 year old students, and all students would have accessibility. And what does that mean? That means that it is affordable or free if need be, that there is transportation, that there is before and after school care for working parents so that they can get them to and from within the hours that they work. All of those things are the basics, right? That meals are provided for those who need it, both breakfast and lunch. So all of those things are something that we think about logistically when we're thinking about how to make preschool experiences accessible and how to give equal opportunities to all. The next thing you think about is you want to have integrated inclusive programs. So children with special needs are in classrooms with typically developing students, because more so for preschool than perhaps any other grade, they need those opportunities to communicate and build strong social skills that they gain with peer models. So when we have segregated special education classrooms and they don't have access to that kind of communication development and those social skill developments with their typically developing peers, we're already holding them back from their full potential as they enter into kindergarten. After that, I would definitely take a look at the quality of the teachers. All preschool teachers should have, hopefully, early childhood education degrees or experience in education equivalent to that, so that it's not just the students who are enrolled in private preschool programs that are getting that quality teaching experience, but for all of our students. And that goes across the board, whether special education or general education or any private or public preschool. It should all be equal opportunities to quality teaching experience.
It's very multi-layered.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting because I would think that perhaps the average person, when they're thinking about a high quality preschool, they might just be thinking about instruction, but you're bringing up some other aspects of preschool that may not necessarily be the first thing that comes to mind, right? Like, you need to have transportation so that there's access. You need to have like the financial side, and then also like the teacher side of it too.
Right. What are the obstacles, Kat, to create those types of opportunities?
A lot of it is lack of knowledge, to be honest. So if you have an administrator who comes through and all they can see through their lens is that children are playing, and they don't understand how children learn through play, and perhaps the teacher doesn't understand how to reflect and document that learning to show administrators and families, then those are all barriers. Children will learn through play because they do. But what is the teacher's role in play? Are you interrupting the play, or are you adding to the play? And for administrators, do they understand, do they have knowledge around early childhood to know what early childhood standards are, what children are able to do through play, the literacy and the communication that can be involved in play? So probably knowledge is the greatest barrier. So a lot of our preschool teachers will succumb to pressure and start pushing down what used to be first grade standards, right? And they're working on things like the calendar and counting to 100, and they're holding their hand and forcing them to write their name. And they do that because they feel that standardization pressure, testing pressure.
Right. No matter what age you are, learning is social, right? But especially at the younger grades or ages, that's like the predominant way that they learn is through that interaction. And it has to be interaction that is, as you say, collaborative, not like a teacher forcing you to write something that you don't understand what that is and why it's useful.
That's right. Children construct knowledge, and we know from Vygotsky that it's socially constructed. Mm-hmm. So that's not something, no matter what theory of teaching you're talking about, that's not something that's debated. It's something that we know. Then the question becomes, how do we support that in our classrooms?
So, Kat, as you are our community partner representative, what can our community do to support early childhood education? If you were Empress of the Universe,
had the magic wand,
what would you like to see our communities in Hawaii doing more of to support early childhood?
So it starts with the legislation. So you have to be an advocate there, because the legislation controls all funding and programming, right, for UH and for the DOE. And from there, then we have to increase our early childhood educators in our state. So what does that mean? That means expanding the program at the university level first, as most of our teachers are coming from our UH system. We have to make that more accessible. So what are the pathways that allow our teachers, our pre-service teachers or existing teachers, to get that education around early childhood, that licensure around early childhood, that is affordable, and that where they're on the outer islands, is it accessible? Can they do it around the workday? You know, we have very small early childhood education departments in the universities. So that's why. Yes. So if you want to expand early childhood, it's like the chicken and the egg, just saying we need lots more preschool classrooms and not having quality teachers to staff them is a real problem. So start legislature, university system, and then we are bringing together, hopefully, and there are several organizations that do bring together early childhood organizations in the state, and they are trying to work less siloed and work more together.
Tell me a little bit more about some of the organizations that are kind of working a bit more collaboratively to reduce the siloing that's going on. I'd love to hear a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so I'm really bad with the acronyms always. Children's Action Strategy Network. Is
acronyms
one.
Are the worst.
We love acronyms here in Hawaii. Yeah.
Exactly, right? For the DOE, we have the EOEL, which is the Executive Office of Early Learning. EOEL provides great training for their teachers. We require now, they went through the legislation, and now if they don't have an early childhood degree, they need to be working towards one as an EOEL teacher. But we do not have the same, we don't have the same expectation for our special education teachers. So I would definitely like to see more integration, more playing in the same sandbox.
I think we have lots of golden nuggets here, Kat. I mean, we could talk to you for hours, and you're so knowledgeable. You make me so proud of you as a colleague and as a friend, you know, so we're so thankful to you for giving your time to talk with us today.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
In today's episode, we focused a lot on quality preschool education, including some ways to spark curiosity and engagement for our keiki. Here's Kat to summarize.
The most important thing that I would stress is not to push down curriculum into our pre-K and our K classrooms. And the importance of taking a pause in early childhood and really understanding that you have to give children, like I said, those experiences that they may or may not be getting in the home. As far as that conversation and social skill building and play, it can't be relegated to 30 minutes a day.
Our conversation with Kat was chock full of so much wonderful information that you'll definitely be hearing from Kat again soon. Mahalo for listening to Ilua Literacy.